Welcome to the Dirt on Data podcast, where we explore how to unlock the data needed to transform agriculture for smallholder farmers around the world. Our co-hosts, Richard Charlatan and Drew Whedon, talk to the people, businesses, researchers, and visionaries leading the ag data revolution. Along with our partners and collaborators, we explore the creative new ideas and innovations that improve food security, build sustainable and inclusive food systems, and catalyze a vibrant agricultural data ecosystem.
Welcome to the Dirt on Data. I'm Richard Charlatan. I'm the Director of Agriculture and Economic Growth at Tetra Tech and the lead technical advisor on the Enabling Crop Analytics at Scale initiative. I'm so happy to be co-hosting this podcast along with Drew Whedon. Each month, we explore the innovations shaping the future of crop analytics, bringing you the dirt on agricultural data. In our past episodes, we've discussed why agricultural data is important to smallholder farmers and how analytics providers find, access, and use farm data to deliver timely crop management and market services to farmers. Today, we welcome Ruthie Musker to discuss FAIR data principles. Ruthie is the Project Officer of Data Policy and Practice at CABI. Ruthie is an expert in evidence-based agriculture, conservation, and data research. Ruthie's work focuses on how human and natural systems interact and complement each other. Ruthie, welcome. Could you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Hey, Richard. Great to be here. As you said, I work with CABI. I've been with CABI now for about 5 years or so, primarily looking at open data and now FAIR data and how the principles can help with food security, smallholder farmer livelihoods, and best practice in sustainable agroecosystems. My background is in conservation. I sort of stumbled into data and at how important collaboration is across all sectors. I've been leading several projects in CABI around agricultural data and management. So yeah, great to be talking to you.
Thanks, Ruthie. It's funny that you say that you stumbled into data. I think many of us working on agriculture and conservation and similar issues are stumbling into data, particularly seeing all the new things that we can do with data to help smallholders and people around the world to manage their agriculture and the environment. Ruthie, you mentioned FAIR principles. Can you tell us what are FAIR principles and why are they important?
Sure. So the FAIR principles are an acronym and they stand for findable, accessible, interoperable, and reusable. The FAIR principles have been around for a while now. There's a scientific paper that I can attached to this podcast, some of the initial thinking around it. And it initially came from research, academic research data about how to make sure data is, I guess, following best practice. Lots of organizations in this space very much struggle to understand what do you actually do with the data. And especially when you're talking about agricultural data ecosystems, or the way sort of data travels from one organization to the next in order for a problem to actually be solved, there's more and more attention paid to that data actually being reusable and to be used as successfully as possible, which can include the interoperability angle to make sure that, you know, data is standardized and the value of it can be maximized. So the FAIR data principles are used as a framing in many projects, even beyond the academic research space now, of how to conceptualize what good data practice and good data management actually looks like.
Thanks, Ruthie. So you mentioned FAIR data was findable, accessible, interoperable, and reusable. You know, we talk a lot about how important it is to collect more ground truth data on smallholder farms so that we can develop the kind of analytics that those smallholders need to better manage the challenges that they face. But making sure that information is usable and findable is really critical. Can you give us some examples of FAIR data in practice?
Sure. Well, so this is one of the things that we're actually looking into in this project that I mentioned. It's called the Enabling Data Access Project that we're working on with the Gates Foundation. And one of the things that we're sort of exploring is that FAIR data might actually look different in different contexts, and good practice in FAIR data looks different in different contexts. And so back to the example that you just gave, Richard, around ground truthing data, one of the things that we're trying to explore is who needs that and what does fair mean to them? So if you're a private sector organization, if you're a government, if you're an NGO, what reusable data and what findable data of what the ground truthing data is might actually look different. And so how do you, as a project designer who is in charge of data collection, in charge of planning what data collection looks like and management and sharing of it, how can you use the FAIR data principles to make sure the stakeholders who need to use that data actually can? Our assumption is that, you know, they might have different computing power and capabilities. They'll have different funding structures. They'll have different strategies and goals and policies they have to follow. And so looking at good practice and FAIR can potentially look very different. Going back to the examples, we've done a project with the Ethiopian government on creating what a FAIR data policy looks like for them for soil and agronomy data. But what was very important was that it wasn't consultants coming in and telling what FAIR data looked like. It was done in a very strong collaboration with the ministry and a group called the Coalition of the Willing. And they dictated exactly what does findable look like for the Ethiopian government and for the people that need to use it. And that findable is a different definition of findable than what, you know, would come out of the UK government or would come out of the US government. And so really using FAIR as a framework, but adaptable to the people who actually need to reuse it. And when you're thinking about this in a very long data value chain going from problem to solution, you can see how the various conversations would change depending on what your collection of stakeholders are.
Thanks, Ruthie. That's super interesting. Building on the example in Ethiopia, what I understood from you is that you've been working with the government around that data and defining what FAIR means for them to improve how they manage and use and reuse data. How ultimately does that help smallholders? What are the kinds of things that you'll be able to do, or the government and extension agents in Ethiopia will be able to do, having gone through this process with you?
Absolutely. So the ministry has decided on this policy for soil and agronomy data as important because of the problems that it wants to solve for smallholder farmers. So the data that needs to be available, that needs to be findable, that needs to be reusable, collected by several research organizations, needs to be packaged together to make a decision for smallholder farmers. So because the government has come into the conversation about FAIR with a problem that smallholders are having that it wants to solve using data, the policy being developed around FAIR is actually helping to achieve that. So the implementation of the policy has never been the goal. The implementation of the policy is a means to the data being used as usefully as possible to overcome the challenges of smallholder farmers around soil and agronomy.
Thanks, Ruthie. So building on that example, some of the biggest issues, at least that we're finding, are that because data collection is fragmented and expensive and difficult, the more we can get everybody in the ecosystem collecting data that is especially interoperable and findable and accessible, the faster we can apply the new analytical tools that are available. And even without doing any advanced analytics, the more we will understand what the current situation is, which in many places we really don't know. Like, we don't know where fields are. We don't know what's grown in those fields. We don't know the state of the soil. We don't know the state of the watershed. And so just being able to kind of mosaic together a picture of what's happening now as a first step, and then being able to apply it in all kinds of different use cases because it is FAIR, is what we're thinking a lot about. So what's your vision of where this will all go and why this is so important to a data ecosystem that supports smallholders?
Within agricultural development, there's a whole series of relationships and systems. So there's huge focus on data collection and analytics, as you mentioned. And then the reuse component of that is extremely important. And as I mentioned before, it's reuse by a lot of different organizations with lots of different needs, different strategies, and different goals. The R component of reusability and FAIR data just sort of flags, okay, who is going to use this and are they waiting for it? If they are waiting for it, you know, you can talk to them about what their what their needs are, what their goals are, and you can create it for them in mind. But what if you don't know who would reuse it? And what if that conversation never comes up? And post-project, it's an assumption by putting the data out there, which is somewhat the difference that we're looking at between open and fair, is that the reusability component makes it very clear that as a project, you perhaps need to be responsible for identifying and engaging the reuser. And so thinking about the complexity of agricultural development, thinking about it from that reusability side. And we are thinking through some ideas to where maybe FAIR takes a more active voice rather than a passive voice. So maybe if you're implementing FAIR, you're not talking about findable, which is a bit passive, but you're talking about found. So if your goal is to make data found, it completely reframes it to being dependent on someone else besides yourself. If you frame it as being reused, it does the same thing. So it begins to sort of close those connections and, you know, building those relationships to really build out what the ag data ecosystem looks like.
Thanks, Ruthie. Can you give me some examples of what you would need to do differently in order to make sure that that data was found and reused, whether you're a development organization or a private sector agriculture firm? What would you do differently to implement FAIR?
It's a great question, and it's a really tricky one. One of the conversations that we have with stakeholders often are around sort of what you have control over and ultimately what you can get funded. And having reliance on another organization actually reusing it, your own data, is not something you have control over. We've been looking into incentives quite a lot, particularly from research data, but I think the applicability goes to other organizations. A lot of it is setting metrics for relationship management, making sure that there's a clear problem that you're trying to solve and knowing who is in charge of actually making the decision that goes to a solution. So we talk a lot about problem-first approaches, really understanding who has the problem and who actually is in charge of making the decision for the solution to happen. How that relates to what you were saying about the example is ultimately the goal of, you know, you've mentioned before, it's all about sort of helping smallholder farmers in a certain way. And so if the goal of every organization involved is to help smallholder farmers and very intentionally doing so and having the indicators that they're collecting for their measurement of success dependent on that, then it might sort of reframe what success looks like per project so that it is dependent on the data being reused, because it's only if it's being reused that the decision will be made to solve the problem, which will help the smallholder farmers. Going back to the example in Ethiopia, this is the closest example of this being done in practice, and it's still only a little bit halfway through. It's a tough question. It's really difficult. A lot of how projects are set up, a lot of how, you know, organizations measure their success don't necessarily depend on the actual reuse.
Thanks, Ruthie. You made a really interesting point there about the factors that, you know, really motivate people to share data. Can you tell us, just in your experience, what you see are the major incentives and disincentives to different kinds of organizations sharing and using data?
Sure. I'll use this as a time to plug a paper I've written looking at research data sharing. We divided it into four categories of incentives of how people would share. So the four categories are personal perception of yourself. So that's your personal goals and how you want to be viewed as a leader or a visionary in an organization. The second category is how other people view you, which is an important distinction as an organization. So the sort of external reputation. The third one is policies. So it's others telling you exactly what to do and you comply. And then the fourth one, it's a slight outlier, but we call it the technology category. And your incentive is to have a very strong, clear output, which often comes in the form of technology. And so each of these categories have several layers of incentives underneath them. But one of the most interesting things that we found in the research is no one works. It's in combination with each other that it actually is most successful. And so a lot of care must be paid to what incentivization for data sharing in particular looks like.
Thanks, Ruthie. So those four factors were key for researchers. Do you think that they're the same for private sector organizations or development organizations working in agriculture?
It's a good question. That's something that we're hoping to explore. And I would love to hear from other organizations on if they've done any work on incentive structures and what they feel like has worked well for them in the past.
And Ruthie, you know, one thing I think that we at least wonder is the extent to which the extra steps required to make data findable and shareable are an obstacle in themselves. And so do you find that there are ways to make it easier for those people collecting data for it to become findable and shareable? In many of the discussions we've had, our partners say what we really want are the pipes and plumbing so that we can get data off of our mobile devices into the cloud to make it easy to share and use. Do you think there's also a kind of friction in the system that extra effort is hard for people to make? And if we make that easier, we'll get more data shared?
Yeah, absolutely. That's one of the major concerns that we hear from all sorts of organizations is that cost of actually following good practice. We have a couple ways of thinking about it. And the first one is that you almost want to create the pipeline of work in such a way that the problem is so clear and pressing that you have to follow good practice in order for the decision to be made. And you have someone, as I've mentioned before, on the other end asking for it. So saying, you have to, and I want to fund this so it happens. And we're trying to make the decisions and that process a lot more dynamic and active. And so it's not trying to sort of figure things out at the end of, how do we comply with the policy that the donor has asked us to do? But there would have been no way to do the project without having done that already. So it's sort of a reframing of how data is even thought about and ultimately like what successful projects look like and what goals of projects actually are. So that's one side of it. And the other side is what I was mentioning before around a very intentional and adaptive processes, because really fundamentally the purpose of the data is to be valuable. The purpose of the data is to inform and to solve a problem. And if it's not solving the problem, and even if it follows the most perfect process, if that process is not designed to help solve the problem, then, something needs to be rethought there.
Thanks, Ruthie. I'm curious how interoperability plays into this discussion, because I totally agree that FAIR principles need to be contextualized and, each kind of question you're trying to answer, process you're trying to inform has a different kind of set of requirements, and it's important not to over-standardize. But how do you achieve interoperability within that? Because certain things need to be standardized in order for you to really benefit others with data that you share.
That's a great point. I think that there's probably quite a lot of underestimation of how hard that interoperability discussion actually is.
I mean, definitely it's difficult. And there have been so many different experiences with data standards, some too strict that they're not useful, some too open that they're not useful. For those of us working on smallholder agriculture, how can we come together to agree on what's important to standardize and where we need flexibility?
So a colleague, Jeffe Onerheim, wrote a paper on why do soil standards struggle to take root? And one of the really interesting outcomes that I saw that she found was she essentially framed standards adoption and implementation and success as a systems change. And systems change takes decades. So a way of framing conversations can be looked at in terms of, sort of technology as a whole or as a pathway. What are the major systems changes that are happening and what needs to be standardized for those? And then what are not necessarily systems changes and things that can happen on a much quicker cycle? Because if you frame it in terms of systems change, especially if you compare that to strategy cycles for donors, strategy cycles for organizations, they're not decades long. And so if you have a plan in place that you're hoping will still be in place in 20 years, you know, maybe it will, maybe it won't. And so sort of dividing how you're actually thinking about the standards process as both a systems one and then ones that are a little bit more incremental, I found that to be a really helpful way of conceptualizing what we're actually up against when it does come to standardization, and a way of people feeling a little bit better about how difficult they are to actually implement.
Thanks, Ruthie. Yeah, I mean, I think in many ways what's happening is the digital ecosystem for agriculture in developing countries and even in developed countries is still very much in formation. And we see that in our work every day. But I do think there's opportunities for us to come together and be strategic as a community in defining where standards would be most useful for some very basic data that everybody needs and can be standardized, things like field boundaries, and done in a way that is flexible. So you know, if you stand in the middle of a field and collect a point, that's one kind of field location, and if you walk around the corners of the field, that's another, and if you trace a line around the boundary of the field, that's another, and can be used for different things and different levels of analysis. So I think there's lots of opportunity for us to come together, and I think it's really useful to have something like FAIR as a kind of framework to think through how to do that. Ruthie, what's the one most important insight you would share with the broader community working on smallholder agriculture from your work advancing the FAIR data principles?
Yeah, so I think the one insight that I've found most interesting is, don't look at FAIR as a checklist. How can you use the principles to help you achieve your goals and to help smallholder farmers achieve their goals? It is a really, you know, an interesting adaptive process, and it can be combined with human-centered design. It can be combined with systems thinking, change management, all these different processes that are really becoming more and more popular in this space. And so use it as you can to achieve the goals that you're trying to achieve. Just because you don't necessarily follow the, you know, very clear sub-principles that are in the initial paper, it doesn't mean that you can't do FAIR. There are ways of using the framework to help you achieve your goals.
Thanks, Ruthie. So Ruthie, what are you most excited about being able to do in the next few years that you can't do now?
So it's really exciting to see where FAIR is sort of going to go, because there's a lot of new ideas. There's a lot of new things that really need to be tested in the next couple of years. The principles themselves are relatively new, and they're being applied beyond research now. So lots of data collection is happening now. We're learning how the data is actually being findable. We're learning more about what that value chain looks like, about how problems lead to solutions and how FAIR can facilitate that. We're learning about the different steps along the way and the people that are involved in each one of those steps. It's very exciting to be part of this new and what is a really exciting process with so many stakeholders involved, lots of people doing really awesome work. And it's really seeing how the pieces all fit together.
Great answer. Thanks, Ruthie, and thanks to all the listeners out there. We look forward to seeing you next month and learning more about the dirt on data.
In this episode, Ruthie covered the complexities and adaptability of FAIR data standards, and that stands for findable, accessible, interoperable, and reusable data. The ECAS project is working to build a more FAIR data ecosystem and has some tools like ECAS Field Mapper for ODK that was mentioned during episode 3 to guide agricultural enumerators in practicing FAIR data principles. We'll drop many of the links that Ruthie mentioned into the show notes for listeners to access. Next month, we'll dive into how data supports access to financial services for smallholder farmers and learn how ground truth data overlaps with financial equity. This is the Dirt on Data podcast. We're produced by the staff of Tetra Tech's Enabling Crop Analytics at Scale initiative, and we're supported by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Our special thanks to our hosts, Richard Charlton and Drew Whedon, and to our guest this month, Ruthie Musker. To receive the latest and greatest updates from the ECAS project, as always, follow us on Twitter at ECAAS_agdata or visit our website at cropanalytics.net. We look forward to seeing you next month.